Hello and welcome to this week's Therapy for Me. And I'm not really sure I've got much to talk about this week, even though bizarrely quite a few things have happened. And I've been trying to work out what to say about them. And actually, after saying the thing itself, I've not really got much to expand on. But we'll see how we get on when I get started. And let's have a bit of that twangy guitar. I ended up not wanting to leave Gran Canaria in the end, as is always the case. After needing that bit of time to acclimatise myself when we got there and doing that thing that I do of finding everything I don't like about it right at the beginning, having built it up to be something and then learned to live with it, not learned to live with it actually, to see it more in a more balanced view, which is ultimately what I do by the time we come home, I would have liked to have stayed for a few more days. And actually it talks to the thing that in reality for holidays, I think sort of 9 or 10 days is the perfect length of time. I wasn't at the point where I was ready to come home. In fact, quite the opposite. I didn't want to come home. So packing up and coming back was a little bit of a drag. And as everything went by towards the end, the hotel itself and the place itself, I was becoming even more charmed with than, I had got to at that point already, if that made sense. And it was just little touches. It was little touches of thoughtfulness. And I ended up getting all of our wine that we paid for paid back, which was absolutely lovely to have that done. And the manager, Alberto, who turned out to be an absolutely top chap, got it. And that was great. We had a very pleasant meal on the restaurant or at the restaurant on the 9th floor, which was really, really, really good. And the food was exceptional. And we managed to have a night where there wasn't much breeze. So it was really nice to be sat up there. So it ended really, really nicely. We had a lovely last few hours on the last day. There was no real panic to get out of there. All the travel back home was really smooth. We landed 5 minutes before we should have landed. We were home, you know, in very, very good time. And the only thing about getting home was just that sleeping in your own bed thing, which is always nice. But the place itself is somewhere I can certainly see us going back. So I don't know. I need to. It's a salutary lesson to myself that I need to not jump to conclusions when I first arrive somewhere new, because it's not going to be what my ultimate view on the place is when I've had chance to actually, you know, look at it in a more balanced way, which I'm not convinced I did. But then I'm also quite happy with this realization that I am a bit of a snob. And actually understanding that is probably a helpful thing moving forward, because I can balance my instant reactions knowing that part of it stems from there.
Tuesday.
I got an email while I was away asking if I would be free to go on to the Front Row Club program on Radio 4. And I wrote back and said yes. And it was all to do with the trade association that I work for, and to do with tariffs and to do with how tariffs were going to affect musical instruments, and how they were going to affect UK manufacturers moving forward. Was there an opportunity there? Was it just all doom and gloom? And I said, yes, of course I could be on. And we bounced around with a few emails, and we actually had a Zoom call while I was there with one of the researchers or people off the show. I think what it seems like is there's a group of them that take turns to research and produce and all those kind of things. And he was a really nice guy, and we had a very interesting chat. And we were on the phone. As it turned out, I was on the phone with him far longer than I was actually on the programme, which is part of these bizarre things that go on when you get involved with something like this. But it took me back into the whole tariff thing. There'd obviously been news while we were away that there was going to be this 90-day pause. It all looked like a bit of nonsense from the outside. It all looked like it had been done on the back of a fag packet. But I put out an email to, you know, 10 or 15 members just to ask for a bit of opinion. got some opinion back as to what it would mean for the industry, and then sort of got myself a little bit more involved in the timeline of it all. And it on balance, I still, it's not that I don't get it. I get the whole trade deficit thing that the US has. I get all of that. I also get there's issues other places in the American economy that there's, you know, he's got 900 trillion quids worth of debt that's going to need renegotiating and resetting this year, which is going to be a problem for the US. And with the strength of the currency as it was, then that was going to be something that was going to be, you know, tricky, and was a thing that government, obviously we forget about this, but governments have to do in the background all the time. And the amount they spend on loans to service debt is often far more than major departments actually spend in a year. So there's all that running on as well. And then you've got this viewpoint that he has, which is, I don't know, is possibly a correct viewpoint, but feels a little bit out of touch in terms of he feels America's being ripped off. But of course, you are where you are with a global system. The years and years and years and years that have come to the point where America essentially is the market for a huge part of the world is not something that you can just switch and hope that that will happen without, you know, any form of, I don't know what word that you use there. You could say wrinkle if we're talking about billions being wiped off stock exchanges, possibly trillions. We could call it a wrinkle, but certainly there's going to be one hell of a financial wrinkle if you do the things that is trying to be done. And then we're now looking at where we are and all the kind of postulating around the fact that this pause and whether the tariffs will come back or not, and I don't know whether they will, and I don't know whether behind the scenes, you know, after what was looking like a fairly chaotic period and the bond markets looking very, very, very twitchy, whether actually maybe the grown-ups have retaken control a little bit. And actually this, which was an ideological quest for a chap called Pete Navarro and for Trump himself, has been battered back down a little bit, and they'll try and play it as something else. But it's as an example of something man-made that's had an incredible impact and caused a huge amount of problems, including potential problems for a lot of people that I work with on a day-to-day basis, then it's fairly unprecedented in what he's managed to achieve.
Wednesday.
So the whole Radio 4 thing was really interesting. It was done the same way that the Times Radio was, which was all on Zoom. And it's strange because you see yourself, they use rooms or some clever way of manipulating Zoom to sort of split the different parts of the call. So at points in time, I was seeing Kirsty Walk and she would be talking to somebody that I couldn't hear. So that would potentially be another guest, or that would potentially be the production staff. And I could only see her and the other person that was on the segment I was on. The thing that's strange about it is all that's fine, but at the point when you're talking, they must clearly as well broadcast one of the just one of the pictures, which obviously was just the picture of whoever was talking. Because when I was talking, I was on the screen twice. And bizarrely, the other side of me was inverted. So because of the way the screen was, It was a three-way triangle, and I was at the top, and Kirsty was at the top, and the other chap was on the bottom. And then when I went to speak, it was just me on the top, but I had me in facing one direction, flipped one way on the right, and flipped the other way on the left, so it looked like a direct mirror image of myself, except one of them was slightly delayed. So it was like a mirror image of me, except we weren't actually doing the same things at the same time. It was like an echo of me, but flipped, which was a bit odd. In fact, it was more than a bit odd. It was a little bit like, if you've watched Tenet, there's a scene in Tenet where he runs up and down a window on two sides, and it was a little bit like that. But The experience itself was fine. I don't think I was particularly good, but then again, I don't know if the questions were as good as they should have been. They didn't seem to have a consistent thread. And actually, the conversation, which really, I think the problem was the outcome of the conversation was the thing that you would expect, which was, is there an opportunity for people in the UK as part of the tariff thing? No, not really. There just isn't. Musical instruments are one of those things where, apart from very, very small manufacture, the products that are designed in a country tend to be built in the same place around the world, irrespective of what country is designing them. So by that I mean, if you're designing guitar amplifiers at a certain price point, then irrespective of where the company is that ultimately has got the brand on the box, they're all built in the same place. So consequently, guitar amplifiers below a couple of $1,000, or certainly below $1,000, that are going into the US are all coming from China. So they're all going to be subject to the same tariff. So it doesn't matter if they're from the UK or the EU. There's no real competitive advantage to any country unless you're not facing a tariff, or you do something that you shouldn't be doing to try and grey import them in by putting a different badge on from a different country, which I don't know how you would manage for a long time, and I don't know how major brands would do. So ultimately the outcome is roughly the same global. There might be an advantage for an odd UK producer who might find that his hand-built thing is now closer in price to a production line thing, and so therefore people go, oh, that thing that was $2,000 that I discounted is now $2,000 relative to the thing that was $1,000 and is now $1,500, so maybe I should go that bit extra because the differential in cost, the transfer cost, is now something that makes sense. But in that situation, that manufacturer in the UK probably hasn't got the infrastructure to scale up and take advantage anyway. So it was one of those where ultimately we had a conversation trying to find something that wasn't necessarily there. But as a thing to do, it was quite nice, and it was really nice to talk to and meet Kirsty Walk, because obviously with the political thing that I've got going on, she's one of those people that's been around as parts of things. So it was very pleasant that it was her that was, you know, that was doing the interviewing. And I don't know, what tends to happen with these things is that once you start being on a phone list, on an email contact list, that you tend to get contacted, you know, provided you turn up on time and you don't say anything silly and you're not difficult to deal with. And in reality, like anything, they want somebody who's not difficult to deal with. So the fact that we turned up at 6:45 for a segment that didn't go on till nearly 7:30 and we were on for 10 minutes and then we went again, the fact that we arrived on time and all those kind of things means there's a good chance you might get asked back in the future.
Friday.
So I've arrived at the point where I've kind of run out. That's kind of been the big things in the week. Thursday was pretty much a working day. Friday was a bit of work, and then off out to the football. So I don't know what I've really got to feed in now that is going to be anything that you're going to be that interested in, which of course is a little bit bizarre, because I'm only just starting on Thursday's piece and we've got something for tomorrow as well, and we're only at 14 minutes long. Now, I have done pods that, you know, I've done TFMs that haven't lasted any longer than this, so that's something that's not unusual. I guess one thing I can reflect back on, because some of you all started to have heard this now, and if you're not part of the Steve Hogarth Corona Diaries crew, there's still an opportunity for you to hear it in the future. But I did an interview when I was back in Ports of Land with Nick Beggs, who's is famous for being the bass player and co-songwriter in Kajagoogoo. For those of you of an age who remember Kajagoogoo, and I certainly do, but has done lots of other prog stuff and been involved in lots of other things and played with lots of other people, some very eminent people, sort of since, and kind of mixes within this kind of pop world and this prog world. And it's nice to be able to talk about that now, because it was just a joy to have a chat with him. And the interview did not go the way that I thought it would go. I was set up to do something a little bit because he's very funny. He's very, very funny, and he's a little bit chaotic and all over the place, or he can be. But I think, you know, that is just a mask that he wears. And so I was set up for something a bit like that, a bit light and frothy. And actually, we got into a different place, and we started, you know, talking about him and some of his personality and characteristics and traits, and how it resonated with my son as well. So I listened back to it yesterday, and as a thing, I was really quite proud of it. I talked a bit too much, which is the cardinal sin when you're supposed to be interviewing. I did talk a little bit too much, but other than that, it was a really nice chat, and it's nice getting some of the reaction to that when it comes back. And I'm going to look forward to hopefully speaking to Nick again in the future.
Friday.
I'll leave you with a couple of things. One, it's a difficult place to be a Sheffield United fan at the moment. We beat Cardiff last night, and it was great to be back at Bramall Lane, and it was a relatively entertaining game and nice to win. But we're playoff bound after what has been a remarkable season, with three teams chasing for two promotion places and being way ahead of everybody else. We're going to be the one of the three, and it's all of our own making. We had a bad week. We lost three games in a week. It was the worst kind of turnaround you could have. We lost a game that we at Oxford, and in a perfect world, we wouldn't have played again till the following Saturday. But we played twice in that week, and we came unstuck twice again. And these things tend to happen. Teams tend to have a little blip, and they'll have a blip not for one game, but for two or three. And that blip has done for us. The way the results went last night, there's three games left to go. It's no way is it in our hands, and I don't see either of the two teams around us, Leeds and Burnley, losing two of their three games, which is what would need to happen to allow us to get automatic. Plus, we would have to win our three, and one of those games is against Burnley. So, it's the, you know, we're going to end up finishing well clear in the playoff places, and we're back in that whole thing now of playoffs, and we don't do well in the playoffs. I've seen United lose playoff finals at Old Wembley, Cardiff and New Wembley. So I'm, apart from the fact there'll be an experience and we've still got to get to Wembley, we've still got a double leg semi-final to get through. We'd all started thinking that we were going to go up automatically, and the last two times we've gone up to the Premier League, we've gone up automatically. So this is the jolt back. It was going to happen to one of us, and it's happened to us, and it's frustrating because the teams that we lost to shouldn't have happened. We had plenty of possession. We just couldn't convert into goals. It happens. It's one of those things. In reality, the two best sides in the division are probably going to be the two that go up. And certainly Leeds have beaten us twice and Burnley have beaten us already. So we can't argue with that. But when it came to it, for all of the, it has been an incredible season. We just couldn't quite manage it in the end. So we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. But there was a kind of an air over everybody yesterday as we went to the match, just of that bit of what might have been and disappointing. Even though when you look at the points tally, we've had an incredible season, and we absolutely would have taken it in August. When you're in this point, it's a little bit hard to deal with. So yeah, there was a little bit of an air of doom and gloom that was kind of hanging over Bramall Lane last night. But by the time we got to result in the end, I think we'd all picked ourselves up a little bit and we're feeling a little bit more positive. The other thing is, I just to say that I finished watching The Residence and it was absolutely fantastic. And if you've not tried it and you want something for the bank holiday weekend, then The Residence is as near to joyful as I can point you towards at the moment. And actually, to say I didn't have anything to talk about, we're fast approaching 20 minutes and leaving you with The Residence is as good a thing as I can do, as I wish you a very safe and a very peaceful Easter.
Therapy for Me, then please subscribe and share as you see fit. This has been an A Short Stories production.